Support for WVIA Pop Shop comes from the F.M. Kirby Center for the Performing Arts in downtown Wilkes-Barre, presenting concerts, comedy, family entertainment, and community events in a historic theater. Information and upcoming events at kirbycenter.org.
So it's been a tough year for venerable filmmakers in that Coppola kind of dropped a big bomb with Megalopolis.
Indeed.
And then Scorsese seems to have largely started selling out the values he previously espoused.
Ah, the hypocrisy.
And so now we're turning our attention to Steven Spielberg, another sort of venerated filmmaker. And I guess I'll start by asking you, Alan, is Spielberg a great filmmaker in your opinion?
Well, you know, that's a tricky question for me to answer. I was looking at some of the comments, probably shouldn't have, Kara, on the YouTube for season two, episode one. And Damo claimed that I'm a contrarian, which seems like, if I'm honest, might have like a little hint of truth in it. But when I think about Steven Spielberg, I would describe myself as a Spielberg agnostic insofar as I generally like his movies. I almost never love his movies.
Oh, really?
And then there's Ready Player One, which we both did not care for.
Yeah. Yeah. I would say that Spielberg, he has big ideas and wants to sort of wrestle with big ideas. But there's various ways in which he doesn't always follow through on the execution. Some of the films, there's kind of a goofiness or other flaws that kind of keep the ideas from landing as well as they could and or should.
So you think that's true over the entire breadth of his career?
I think it's something that develops later. I think early Spielberg, I think, probably tends to nail it more often than not.
Interesting.
But later Spielberg, I think, you know, the flaws tend to crop up more.
Perhaps he's lost his way a little bit. That seems like a great topic for a podcast, right? Really thinking about Spielberg, maybe narratively, but also in terms of his philosophy of what works and what the problems are in the world and what kinds of solutions might exist for them. Mm-hmm. Sounds like something we might do a podcast about. So all of that and more, I suppose, right? Next on the Pop Shop. Hi, I'm Alan Austin.
And I'm Patrick Hamilton.
We would like to welcome you to the Pop Shop. Here, stories on the screen inspire conversations about the real world off of it.
And today, we've got an out-of-this-world episode for you, as we have a close encounter with the latest film from Steven Spielberg, Disclosure Day.
If you are enjoying this program, and I don't know how you couldn't, given that witty, incisive kind of wordplay, we would encourage you to, as my daughter Hope says, smash the like button, follow the program. And I think you can even turn on notifications, apparently, on YouTube, so you don't have to miss even a minute of the beautiful mayhem.
WVIA Pop Shop is brought to you by our friends at the F.M. Kirby Center, who we'll be talking with later on in the show.
But before Neil gets here, we ought to spend a couple of moments, Patrick, maybe setting up the film Disclosure Day, which is our topic today.
So Disclosure Day starts off as a sort of conspiracy thriller between Wardex, which is a large quasi-governmental organization that seems to be keeping secrets about possible alien presence here on Earth from the public. And then you've got a group of people who have splintered off from that are working to sort of reveal that information. Caught up in this are the two main characters, Daniel Kellner, who's a cybersecurity expert, and Margaret Fairchild, who is a Kansas City weather woman, both of whom might be more involved in the conspiracy than even they realize. And meanwhile, the world is on the brink of World War III, and it's unclear if we're actually going to be able to avoid it.
It is important that we count the world wars, probably. Properly. So, yeah, it is, I think, as Patrick's introduction suggests, a very complicated film. And Spielberg, as he usually does, has brought in a list of actors to perform it. Emily Blunt plays Margaret Fairchild, the Kansas City meteorologist. We loved her, obviously, in A Quiet Place. Who didn't? Also, shout out to The Fall Guy, which is a much underrated film about making films. It's also funnier than people give it credit to. Josh O'Connor stars as Dr. Daniel Kellner. We both loved him in Challengers, which is one of the great sports films, I think, at this point. Colin Firth is the bad guy heading up Wardex. We have Coleman Domingo as kind of a father figure leading the dissidents and the whistleblowers. And then we have Wyatt Russell as Margaret Fairchild's husband. they're borrowing him from the MCU, Patrick, and he plays remarkably well people that you just have a low level of animosity for, I think. It just, like, he nails it almost perfectly. Also, the son of Kurt Russell and Goldie Hawn.
Yep.
Who knew? Am I the only one that didn't know?
You didn't know that?
I knew.
No. Uh-uh. Oh,
I thought that was fairly common knowledge.
So, between your introduction and my introduction, and if it's okay with Kara, I'm going to turn now and talk to Patrick, because I'm not sure, like, when I'm allowed.
You don't have to say that out loud.
Yes, you should. Please now turn. So, it's a really ambitious topic.
Yes.
That Steven Spielberg is taking on. He's brought in this star-loaded cast of actors to perform it, and yet some of the initial response online among the critics has been quite negative, I would say. There's been a lot of suggestion that if you say anything good about this movie, that you're sort of a Spielberg apologist, that you're in the bag that Spielberg is one of the greats, and thus you're just saying that it's great because it's a Spielberg. I think the question that we need to ask is, where does the Pop Shop land?
Yeah.
And we could do that by pursuing any number of angles, but you're a narrative guy.
I am. And I do like to talk about the narrative and the storytelling.
You do love, and I've actually seen a lot online of critics kind of talking about the narrative elements of it with a lot of disdain and unhappiness.
I'm not quite that way. So I'm gonna give the film credit where I think credit is due.
Okay.
In that I think it is remarkably effective in the way it crafts, particularly the film from the get-go, of being a kind of conspiracy thriller.
Yes.
Because in the same way that the characters Daniel and Margaret are kind of thrown into the situation that they don't really fully understand, I think the film does a really good job of putting the audience in the same position, in that we're just sort of plopped right into the beginning, and a lot of the film is kind of having to piece together the situation that the characters find themselves in, which I thought was really effective in terms of kind of creating, you know, a similar experience for the audience as what the characters are going through.
I totally agree. I thought it was a very effective introduction in that way. I've seen a lot of complaining about it, and I don't want to criticize the critics, but it's a little bit lazy, I think, to want it all laid out for you, just as the film begins. And I think Spielberg is, in sort of using that narrative structure, trying to again, as you said, put us in the position of Margaret and Daniel and characters trying to piece together what is a really monumental film. If you think about all that they have to piece together, you're right. It's a conspiracy film.
Yeah.
It's also a thriller. It's also a first contact story, which obviously Spielberg has come back to repeatedly over the course of his career. But it's a first contact story over the last 79 years. So it's a first contact story that really sort of like is laid out over a broad scope of history. And Spielberg wants to ask a bunch of really heady philosophical questions. Who are we as human beings? How do we see each other? Is there a God? If there is a God, what does God mean in the world in which we live? And if we can understand from that perspective how human beings see each other and how human beings understand God, maybe we can talk about how to build a better world. There's an awful lot packed into this film.
Yes.
That the narrative then has to carry.
Which, now that I've talked about the good, I'll move on to sort of the bad in terms of the narrative, which is that, number one, it's a bit overstuffed as far as a film goes, in that there so is... much. Too much. You brought up kind of the religion sort of God angle.
Yeah.
And I felt that that was a part of the film that I really did not care for in terms of, I thought the way they brought it up didn't make a lot of sense to me. It got resolved in a very sort of pat way. And it seemed like something that you could take out of the film and it really wouldn't change anything. It felt like something he wanted to talk about, but ultimately ended up not really having the room to do so. And so it just kind of felt kind of not really enough to matter for me.
I'd like to pursue that, but I think that might be better pursued in the second half of the show, where we can talk about some spoilers.
Yeah.
This will be the spoiler-free section of the show. So I know that you're a big plot hole guy. That if there's a plot hole, you will see it and you will identify it. And you'll often be a little bit aggravated by what some critics have called lazy writing. Did you feel that way about this? Are there a lot of because you can find hours on the internet right yeah. now of people saying, how is this and why was that and, mm-hmm. and all these kinds of inconsistencies.
Yeah, there are a number of things, again, largely due to the overstuffedness of the film. There are a lot of things that I don't think have enough time to cook in terms of the story. Mm. And then, yeah. then there are some things that are just kind of stupid.
Can you name an example?
Well, any time that the security forces pursuing, in particular Daniel, they prove themselves to be relatively inept. And lots of people make really dumb decisions that should have gotten them into much more trouble than it did.
There's a car chase scene.
Yes,
that is the car chase. Loaded with, and we maybe talk about that in more detail yeah. later too, but there are moments for sure where you think, Wardex is essentially... it's a massive corporation, mm-hmm. but it's in cahoots with the Department of Defense.
Yes.
It has access to all of, not only the most cutting technology we mm-hmm. know, but all of the stuff that they've reverse engineered
yes.
from the aliens that they've kidnapped and the yep. technology that they've seized control of. Their inability to sort of stay on top of the situation
yes.
against two people who are totally unprepared.
Yes, and have none of that background. Yeah,
right.
it's... That's one of the places where the more I think about it, the more it kind of takes away from the film is there's stuff that has to happen to move the plot along, but it's not stuff that makes sense in any kind of logical context.
I think it kind of works for me with Spielberg, though, because there's a real slickness to the way he makes the film, the way the camera moves and kind of mm-hmm. shifts your perspective. He's often shooting through windows in a way, kind of reminding us that all of this is mediated in different kinds of ways. And then... So the plot contrivances that get us to mm-hmm. the car chase and the plot contrivances that get us to the train chase mm-hmm. are ridiculous. Mm. Like, these are situations that could never have yeah. happened given the narrative world mm-hmm. in which they're set. And yet, once the train chase starts, mm-hmm. it has a little bit of that Spielberg magic
yeah.
for me. Like, it's a train chase like we've never quite seen before. We've been mm-hmm. doing train chases since people started making films, essentially.
Or right? trains.
Well, I think film came a little bit later than trains.
But
yeah, we did need both of them.
I'm just saying, people Definitely. Probably chased trains back in the days before film.
That's true. But we started filming them very early when we had film. And so, like, there are moments where I was a little bit forgiving of mm-hmm. the plot holes and the goofiness that you described
yeah.
at the top and the ridiculousness. Because it's such a well-made film.
Yeah.
The narrative of the train chase is great. Mm-hmm. The narrative in which it's embedded, it's got some issues.
Yeah, that there are moments like the train chase and others that work really well.
Yeah.
But then there's stuff that happens around them that
exactly.
doesn't.
Yeah, so I think we agree.
Yeah, that there's... Yeah, there's just stuff that particularly in terms of the MacGuffin of the film...
you do love him.
The device that's kind of playing a large role. Some of the things that happen with that don't really make sense in a way that's ever really explained.
For sure, for sure. But another way that the film worked for me was its setting in Kansas City mm-hmm. amidst the beginning of World War III and this kind yeah. of like tremendous anxiety. And I think it worked for me, and this is not necessarily a praise for Spielberg, but because... It evoked what I felt like in the 1980s with nuclear anxiety. Mm. It reminded me of The Day After. I don't know if you ever watched that miniseries that was on television.
I definitely remember it coming out.
It's set in the Midwest. Mm-hmm. And you watch the ICBMs come out of the silos. And the rest of the film is the people of the Midwest trying to figure out how to survive in the aftermath. And I think that Spielberg's filmmaking may speak to specific generations more than others at this point in his career. And so there was this sense of the 80s about that film that again made me perhaps more forgiving than I should have been mm-hmm. about some of the narrative.
Yeah, the World War III kind of backstory of the film was another element that I didn't really feel was fully cooked.
Yes, there's a lot of half-baked,
yeah.
I think it's fair to say, in this. But you know what's never half-baked mm-hmm. is the programming at the Kirby. And so now would be a good time to take a break mm-hmm. and invite Neil in from the Kirby to talk about what's coming up. And so now we get to welcome Neil into the Pop Shop studio as promised earlier in the episode.
Oh, right. Man. Well, I'm glad I could deliver.
You were here, and then you just apparated. It's awesome.
It's amazing. Just coming out of nowhere, kind of fitting in with the whole Disclosure Day thing. Where'd I come from? What's going on?
100%. And so, could be an alien.
Neil is part of the big conspiracy.
Oh man.
Well, man, that totally turns the film on its head.
The only conspiracy I'm here to talk about, though, is a conspiracy to see great films this summer at the FM Kirby Center.
Well done, sir.
Transitions. But we have,
that's a media man right there.
Hey, we just started our film series, though. We have the Big Screen Summer Series, which is great kids films that are free to kids 12 and under, as well as we have our Curtis Montz film series going on right now, which features independent documentary films and exactly concert films as well. We're really excited that this week coming up, we have Ratatouille for our Big Screen Summer Series. Have you guys seen Ratatouille?
Of course.
It's the...
Yeah. Yes, I have too.
You haven't?
You didn't see Ratatouille?
I have not seen Ratatouille.
That's surprising.
I have an excuse for you now to head over to the Kirby.
I haven't seen that. As a parent whose kids are much too old to go to the series now, there was nothing better on a hot July summer day than be able to take my kids to a 2-hour movie in an air-conditioned space. So you're doing God's work as well as showing like really great movies.
We're trying. You know, actually, it's really cool. This year we partnered with United Way and we actually presenting Camp United at the Kirby. So a couple hours before the screenings on Tuesdays, kids and their families can come for basically a free day of summer camp with fun games and activities that leads right into the film that's also, again, free for kids 12 and under. You'll be able to get prizes, you'll get books, and then you get to see a great film, which is going to be really cool. And then Wednesdays, our Curtis Montz film series, independent film we're doing this time, more of a documentary, actually. It's The Song Remains the Same from Led Zeppelin, if you remember from back in the day, which, if you're going to see a concert somewhere, you're going to want to see it at the Kirby, but to see a great concert film like this on a massive screen with our brand new projector, I'm really excited to see it. It's going to be absolutely beautiful.
That sounds awesome. So my kids are 26 and 23. They're too old for your kids' series at this point?
Not at all.
So I can get them in for free?
Well, 13 and over, I would have to pay just the high price of $5 a ticket.
Okay.
Just
$5. Somebody should see Ratatouille for $5.
Well, exactly. I think it's worth it. And then on top of that, I mean, I know I'm a homer for it, but they have the best popcorn at the Kirby. Mm-hmm. Honestly, I'd be lying if I said there are not many nights where I've had a popcorn dinner, and it's kind of great.
So can I ask you for your perspective on floor corn?
Oh, well, I don't know if I'd take that chance. Okay. I mean,
Patrick does from time to time.
Ohio.
I did once.
And?
One time.
Where?
Still here.
Oh, it's a
that was probably 15 years ago.
It was a while.
It was a long time ago.
Yeah. I mean, so now I know Patrick takes chances.
That's why you should take a chance
on Ratatouille coming over next week to the Kirby Center.
Well, thanks for being in. Yes. You know, we really appreciate it. We appreciate the Kirby's support and all the great community work that you guys are doing.
Love the show. So excited to be here. And yeah, keep popping and chopping, guys.
We will.
Thank you.
Thanks, Neil, for coming by and telling us all about what's going on at the FM Kirby Center so nobody misses a thing. And if you don't want to miss a thing on Pop Shop, you can like this episode, you can subscribe to the show, and be sure and click on notifications so you never miss a thing. As we turn back to continue our discussion about Disclosure Day, spoiler warning as we're going to get into more specific details of the film.
So as we move to the second segment where we think about the film more as a cultural object, it seems clear that Spielberg believes that film can address social issues, that film can create social change. There's an article on him about him in the New York Times Magazine in which he says that the big screen is still the best place for us to work out our collective sorrow, our collective joy, our collective issues. He thinks that being in a theater with a large group of people, that this is a path to sort of group catharsis, that we can move past and build something better. The question is, does he do that in the film? Mm-hmm. And one way to think about that might be asking, what's the problem that he identifies in our contemporary society? And then what are the solutions that he suggests?
Yeah.
So do you want to start with the problem briefly and then maybe dig more deeply into the solutions?
Yeah. So, I mean, there's a couple problems that we can identify.
Yes.
Pretty clearly there's, particularly in terms of the two Wardex camps that are in the film, there's clearly sort of a conflict between information and what should be done with it and who has control over it.
Absolutely.
You know, Wardex, who are sort of set up as the bad guys, they clearly feel that the public is not ready for or equipped for or should not have the information about alien presence on Earth that's been around for, you know, 70, close to 80 years.
Right.
And then you've got the splinter group that feels like that knowledge should be released to the public and the public should know. So kind of, and something very obviously salient in our times, is sort of the control of information and you know, who knows what and who gets to know what.
Absolutely. And then the next layer that Spielberg adds to that is sort of the idea of a deep state or a dark state,
mm-hmm.
that there is this collaboration between big business and the government mm-hmm. that is using that control of information mm-hmm. to oppress large groups of people yes. and to benefit themselves.
Yeah.
That seems like a fairly clear setup of a problem that I think a lot of people would agree that we're wrestling with yeah. today. Yeah. That information, government overreach, the relationship between the wealthy and the government, these are mm-hmm. like fundamental issues.
Yeah.
So does Spielberg then provide convincing answers, do you think? Maybe could we start with religion? Because mm-hmm. I think we can cover it relatively yeah. quickly. You seem to think not with religion.
Yeah, well, I mean, for me, the whole way in which the question of religion comes up in the film mm-hmm. doesn't make sense. Because it comes through the character of Jane, who is Daniel Kilner's girlfriend, who previously was a novitiate at a nunnery.
Right.
And she, when she's talking to her former sister at the nunnery, brings up sort of this idea of, I'm trying to remember exactly how she phrased it, but she's basically she fears that the revelation of alien presence on Earth is going to cause people to not believe in God anymore.
Correct.
Which I don't really see the logic there at all.
There's a big assumption built into her concern that I share with you.
And I don't understand why proof of alien life leads to a questioning of God, and the film never really fills that in for me. And so the way it raised that, and then when she's later having a conversation, the terms kind of change as well, because it's now about, you know, oh, it's about how humanity is no longer as special as it once was. And we get kind of a very pat answer, you know, the sister quotes the Bible about that man is God's supreme creation on Earth. Which I'm like, okay, so apparently Jane just missed those last two words in the Bible.
Now, you've seen students read. Sometimes they'll skip.
Yeah, but Jane seems like a more dedicated student.
Right.
And so for me, the religion thing just gave, it was, yeah. the way it raised the question didn't really make sense to me. And then it gave a pat answer to a completely different question.
It's such an interesting question. And it's done so heavy-handedly in this film. So that when the bad guy is kind of interrogating her by mm-hmm. using the magic wand from a distance, she literally digs her crucifix into her hand and creates a stigmata. Yeah. The nunnery of St. Clair. St. Clair is the patron saint of television, it turns out. It's all so on the nose that it doesn't feel like a serious conversation about how religion may or may not factor into the technological world we live in, let alone how it might factor into a world in which aliens are suddenly discovered. Mm. Yeah, a second solution that Spielberg suggests, and who would have thought that he would just be copying Masters of the Universe, there's a big emphasis on empathy.
There is,
in this film, right? That empathy, what the aliens have over us is empathy. Mm-hmm. Putting aside the fact that the aliens kidnapped two kids and experimented on them to give them secret powers that would eventually manifest in the future, and why they chose to do such a complicated Byzantine plan, makes no sense whatsoever.
I did have as one of my problems in the film aliens abducting children and imbuing them with weird powers, because it feels like that is a problem that the film never really kind of addresses.
It can't, because the whole point is that for the aliens, evolution means empathy.
Mm-hmm.
And the way they treat those kids is the opposite of empathy. You might say that they raise kids like the Mandalorian does.
Yeah, the other, since we're making many comparisons to previous films, the other thing that the ending of this film very much reminded me of was Watchmen.
Interesting.
In that, you know, obviously we're on the brink of World War III, and then we have this big revelation of, you know, the alien presence, you know, all the history of that gets leaked to the news media, and everyone's looking at it at the world. Mm-hmm. And there is kind of this idea of the whole world comes together in that moment to watch the video. And
even the soldiers.
Yeah, that's supposed to solve the looming sort of World War III.
Yeah.
Which, again, seems like a little too pat. Because to me, the 100%. Revelation that America has been hiding information of alien presence from everyone else, and also using their technology to benefit themselves, is not something that's going to really stop the rest of the world And the conflicts in the world once they really start to think about it.
The idea that aliens exist is probably going to lead to an arms race to befriend aliens and use their technology.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. It's also sort of the anti-Dark Knight. The Dark Knight is we can't trust the people with information, so Batman must be a bad guy at the end of the film. I think Spielberg is trying to present the other side of the argument.
Yes.
In fact, but there is something about this Spielbergian optimism that it doesn't suit our current historical moment. So for me, when you get to the end of the film and Emily Blunt's character is doing the disclosure, she's on television, she's broadcasting this, and of course, the networks are all sharing it because that's what corporations are going to do is share the scoop, right? Like, oh, we'll give it to everybody.
Yes.
But as she's doing it, like, I felt an emotional response to it. And I almost never, as Karen knows, feel an emotional response to anything.
You are dead inside, yes.
Yeah, generally it's true. But like it spoke to like an emotion in me, but I think not in the way that Spielberg wanted it to. Mm. Spielberg has this optimism, I think, in truth. That if we pursue truth and we find it and we share it equally and with everybody, it will lead to kind of a utopian society, that truth in that way can lead us to justice. And I think, and I don't want to stereotype a generation, it's such a boomer way of looking at the world that it immediately made me think of the 1976 film, All the President's Men, which is about the Watergate scandal. And in that film, the thesis is there were bad men in government, but the system worked and justice prevailed, right? There were bad men in the Nixon administration, but Woodward and Bernstein, the press, did their job and exposed the malfeasance. And then the courts and Congress did what they were supposed to do and sent people to jail or at least remove them from the White House, right? That from the boomer point of view, that if you can just get to the truth, you inherently get justice to follow. And I don't think Gen X thinks about the world that way. Mm. And speaking to my college-age students, I don't think they think about the world that way either. That there's this sense that truth will bring us justice, but he also ends the film without any sense of what actually happens.
Yeah.
The narrative momentum, the emotional momentum is for us to say, everybody's going to come together and we're going to build a utopia. I don't think Spielberg can make the next day.
Yeah.
Because nobody's going to believe it.
Yeah.
And that was, for me, that was the emotion. It was like this death of innocence. I want to believe in Spielberg's optimism, but man, it was rough for me.
Yeah, no, the end of the film with the way in which it kind of leaves you hanging with what happens next, because for that optimism in truth and belief in empathy and things like that to work, you have to believe that that is what's going to drive things going forward. And I just don't know that we're in a place as a society, as a culture, where that's where we're going to believe things are headed.
Who believes that nowadays? Yeah. Like, who believes that nowadays?
Yeah.
So we've talked about some strengths of the film. We've pointed out some problems, perhaps, in the film. It's probably time to pop or shop.
Yes.
And Kara has somehow managed to quietly lurk off camera for the entire show.
That
so now
is
we gotta
not
bring
true.
We need to bring Kara in. Kara, did you see the movie?
I did.
Okay.
Did you stay awake for the movie?
I absolutely did.
Excellent.
I went at a reasonable time.
Okay. So it's didn't see Star Wars, Mandalorian, and Grogu.
That's right.
Fell asleep at Masters of the Universe. Mm-hmm. Made it all the way through disclosure day.
Sure
feels
did.
Like we're on an upward swing.
This we is a, are.
This
yep.
is a in terms of Kara's story
exactly.
of progress and optimism.
Yes.
So we are now to the point of the show where we have to pop or shop,
yes.
where we have to deliver some kind of verdict on what was. I think, Kara, did you agree generally that it was overstuffed?
I didn't feel that way.
Okay.
No.
Well, you should have contradicted us much earlier then.
No, I mean, I like what you guys are saying. Like I said, I think when we talk about films, when you guys talk about films, I learn a lot more about what I saw. So I would prefer to listen to you guys first than to butt in.
Yeah, when you butt in, I feel like I'm learning.
Okay, well, we can work on that.
Well, as this show has demonstrated, there's still a little work to
We're
be done.
We're only three episodes in. We're still working out the kinks.
So there I can't remember whose turn it is to go pop or shop first this week.
Oh, yeah, I've lost track.
Let's
I'll go
with
first.
Patrick.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. The more I think when I left the film, I was feeling it was a pop. The more I have thought about the film since seeing it, it drops down to a pop minus. There are for me, there's just too many kind of goofy plot coincidences or goofy elements of the plot that are necessary for the story to get where it goes mm-hmm. For me to give it in an unabashed, like, pop. Like, it's not a terrible movie.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't have, like, really massive flaws like, say, Ready Player One did for both of us.
Right.
But it's still got some things that I think maybe would work at an earlier stage of Spielberg's career. Mm. I don't think they work today, and they're just too contrived.
Yeah, I think I generally agree with you. There are moments in this film that really worked for me. The moments, he can do a train chase, or he can do a car chase. It's ridiculous. You have to, it's an Indiana Jones kind of moment where you suspend your belief, mm-hmm. right? And you just, you accept it. But I'm not sure the whole works as well as sort of the different parts of it. And so for me, I decided I was going to give it, and I'm very close to you, a pop slash pop minus.
Oh, no.
It's not quite good enough to be a pop, but it's better than a pop minus. So I've added, yes, it's true. I knew you would love another level of...
Yes.
Well, you're the one that added the pop minus. I've just added a slash.
We created a very simple pop or shop.
Yeah.
And from day one,
yes,
you have violated that very simple pop or shop.
But can we be honest?
Mm-hmm.
That binary view of the world is way too simplistic.
Okay, Steven.
Kara.
Yes. I'm going with a pop plus.
A pop.
Ooh.
Wait, so at the top of the scale?
I didn't say plus plus.
Oh, is there a plus plus at the top?
You, I guess you there did a plus plus okay. the last episode, I think.
I did a minus minus.
Or
like Masters of the Universe?
Oh, wait.
You were not a pot. That was.
Oh, I was thinking The Mandalorian.
Yeah. No, you were.
Was I a plus plus?
I think so.
I could have been. That's a great movie.
Yeah.
Still the best movie we've seen so far in season two.
Yes. Of the three things we have seen, yes.
Wow.
Hey, you know, the longer it hangs in there, the better for Masters of the Universe.
Let's hope
which
they
is soon to
help.
Get its pop shop bump.
Yeah.
So it's a strong pop.
For me, yeah.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it. I think the critics are right in saying that this is one of Spielberg's best films in a long time.
Mm.
I think Emily Blunt's performance was a masterclass. Mm. And, you know, as you said previously about the message being about empathy, I think her character literally mirrors what the film is trying to say, that, you know, we should be more thoughtful, we should be more caring, and, you know, as she says at the end of the film, to listen. We should listen more. So I definitely connected with that. So yeah.
The message, I think, is on point. I think it's
following. I think that's what's carrying my pop plus.
Yeah, yeah. You have to be an optimist.
Sure.
To be carried by it. I've seen more than a few people online who just don't believe it anymore.
True, yeah.
But, you know, maybe we should give him credit for trying to find a more positive way forward in a culture where that doesn't happen is often a culture where empathy is weirdly attacked.
It would be nice to think
that
the culture reflected in this film is closer to how we actually are, but I don't know that I buy into that.
Although two films in a row making the argument for empathy, which is either a good thing, we're celebrating empathy, or a bad thing, we need to celebrate empathy.
Well, I think both of those things can equally be true.
Yeah. Yeah. And on that equally true note, it's probably time for us to wrap.
Yes.
So thank you again for joining us for this episode of The Pop Shop.
And thank you to the Kirby Center for sponsoring WVIA's Pop Shop.
And we will be back next week, Patrick, when we talk about...
We'll be talking about Toy Story 5. We'll be digging once again into Pixar's toy chest of beloved characters. But we'll find out if they will go to infinity and beyond with audiences.
I can't believe you just burned all those puns at the end of this episode instead of saving them for the next one.
I'm sure I can come up with more. And if you want to make sure to catch the next episode, be sure to like this episode, subscribe to the show, and turn on those notifications so you never miss anything that we have to say.
Come join the party.
Oh, you brought that back.
I was saying, we forgot to come join
there you
the party.
Go. Okay.
Yeah, that's good.
Is it okay?
That's perfect.
All right.
Support for WVIA Pop Shop comes from the FM Kirby Center for the Performing Arts in downtown Wilkes-Barre, presenting concerts, comedy, family entertainment, and community events in a historic theater. Information and upcoming events at kirbycenter.org.